Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Rafe Blanford and I are off the disabled list, fighting fit, microphones in hands, ready to rock and roll with another exciting roundup of what's been happening in the world of the smartphones powered by Microsoft's latest operating system. That sounds quite grand, Rafe, doesn't it?
It does. You were sounding very enthusiastic there, Ewan. Not quite 100% fighting fit, but this is the Insight podcast number 58.
Yes, we shall be fighting fit for number 63.
Oh, 59. Well,
can't be 59. I've got to say, because in 63 I'll be in Sweden. You'll have to get James Watley into sub for me.
Yes, two very similar people there. Both very excitable about their mobile phones.
James, if you're listening, I'm going to go Derek Jeter for 2 weeks. So if you want to come on board, give us a call. For everybody else, www, which we don't need to do, but I say it anyway because it gives me time to think of the rest of the URL, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Your comments and feedback are always welcome. Right, coming up in this show, I'm going to do this bit depressing, just so we have a bit of balance. We've got stuff about Instagram. Big numbers, little numbers, low prices, high prices, two different platforms, one single game, and a 40th birthday.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Dum-da-la. Yes, what should we start with? Instagram. Instagraph. Are we really going to see this published Instagraph, Rafe? Because while it's a wonderful idea and it's something we all want to do from our phones, which is post a picture from a Windows phone to Instagram, this isn't official and it's a little bit of a backdoor, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's right. This is all about getting content up to Instagram on a Windows phone device. We've talked about Instagram before and how much people like it. I'll just say on Steve Litchfield's behalf here, don't get filters and Instagram. Of course, it's all about the social aspect, but it's probably one of the most requested apps for Windows phone. There's been plenty of discussion about whether Microsoft or Nokia are talking to Instagram. I think there are discussions going on. It just hasn't quite happened yet, probably because Instagram hasn't signed off on it. But this is a third-party app, Instagraph, that uses a kind of a workaround to make it possible to post content to Instagram. The way it does it is actually there's a server sitting in the middle pretending to be an Android or an iOS device that will kind of post it on your behalf. So a clever workaround, but it is definitely against the Instagram API terms of service. Probably also against the Windows Phone Store terms of service. So it may get approved, it may not. We'll have to wait and see. It's looking like it will be at the moment, but I can't imagine it lasting very long if it gets popular with Instagram. The reason for this is that Instagram basically doesn't allow in its API the posting of photos or indeed registering new accounts. It only allows the kind of the browsing of photos. That's something that there's already a few Windows phone clients for. Metrogram is one of them. So this was kind of causing a lot of interest and excitement because it would allow you to post photos to Instagram from Windows Phone. At the moment, it's basically just posting. It's not any browsing, but I imagine if it developed, more features would get added. But what was interesting here for me is, you know, there is still a tremendous amount of interest in Instagram, and this is just within a relatively small community of people talking about these things online. But it's probably another signal to Instagram, you know, hey, there's a platform out here that has really got a lot of passionate users. But I find it difficult to believe that this would last very long. I mean, Ewan, what do you think? Was it, do you think this is something that Instagram would allow to exist?
No, no, you know, it would be like, Rafe, to carry on just humoring my American listeners, it would be like putting you with a baseball bat and CC Sabathia throwing a ball at you and asking you to hit it with your eyes closed. There's more chance of you making contact with that ball than Instagram going, this is a really nice idea. We're going to let it continue, even though we don't believe in a Windows Phone client.
Yeah, I'm afraid I agree completely. And I was trying to find, when I was writing this up, words to sort of not be too condemnatory. It's an interesting idea and I kind of applaud the technical merit of it, but it strikes me as a terrible business idea and to invest in this kind of thing. And there's going to be people disappointed because it looks set to be a paid for app. And, you know, when it stops working, they're going to be disappointed and all of that. So, you know, I continue to hope that Microsoft and or Nokia can do the right negotiations to get the client onto Windows. And I think it will happen sooner or later. You know, it took a long time for Instagram to get onto Android. So it seems to me they're not against new platforms, but it has to be worth their while doing. And I suspect that means a certain number of users, a certain amount of interest. And, you know, Windows Phone is kind of that chicken and egg situation. But nonetheless, you know, the next round in kind of the Instagram discussion or conversation on Windows Phone.
I disagree with the like other platforms. I think the only reason that Instagram moved to Android was because they had VC funding, and the VC funding needed volume so that they could be a viable target to be bought out, which of course they were from Facebook, so the VC's got their turnover. You know, they've looked at BlackBerry. BlackBerry have courted them. They've said no. Windows Phone have courted them. Nokia have courted them. I'm sure that Ubuntu and Jolla Sailfish will have a quiet, oh, can we have Instagram? No, I believe those guys are at least like focused. And you have to remember now they're part of Facebook. And we'll come to them shortly. But Facebook have their own mobile plans, shall we say, which is starting to become clearer and almost as parasitic as Instagram. But no, I'm sorry, I don't believe that Instagram believe in other platforms. I think the core team who started that program, I think if they could have stayed on iOS forever and not went anywhere else, they would have. I think The investors pushed them into Android. And let's be honest here, because of the volume, and no other platform has the volume that Android had before it went there. So I don't think we'll ever see it now.
That's a reasonable argument, and you know, I can't help but think yes, that is not an unlikely scenario.
Nokia the only thing coming along and going, here's €500,000 to Facebook to make an Instagram client.
Yeah, no, I mean it's certainly not about money in that sense anymore. I suspect it would be about the, you know, having the developer resources available. The cost is pretty much, you know, irrelevant. They wouldn't want to divert teams onto something like that, which they'd see as a distraction, which is why if it happens, I'd expect it to be a bit like the Facebook app is on Windows Phone, in that it will be developed by Microsoft or Nokia or, you know, some other party, and then kind of signed off and okayed by Instagram. I mean, Instagram is still relatively separate from Facebook. The degree of integration isn't quite there. I think that may change over time. But what kind of makes me think it will happen is that ultimately Microsoft does have, you know, quite close links with Facebook. And they are, to a certain extent, natural allies. And Facebook's going to be very much competing with Google and, I think, to a lesser extent, Android. And I think an alliance of convenience between Microsoft and Facebook will make a lot of sense. And you can already see that in some of the degree of integration that's, you know, happening there. So that's why I think ultimately it probably will happen, but it could still be a while away.
Over under. What's going to happen first? Instagram and Windows Phone, or the United Kingdom winning Eurovision?
Or a Facebook mobile operating system?
Oh, technically we have that already.
Well, yes, but it's really just a skin on Android. And I think we should maybe just touch on it briefly. It's nothing really to do with Windows Phone.
Yeah, but all they need to do now is fork Android, put their skin on the top, and they're there.
Well, exactly. But I
so they've got their mobile operating system. There, done. Next.
I suspect their ambitions in the longer term are going to be much more extensive than that. You know, in the same way that Amazon has, you know, forked Android for Kindle products, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Facebook ultimately do the same thing, or perhaps even, you know, have a completely fresh start on the operating system side. I would expect an Android fork. I mean, they're saying they're quite happy just doing what's effectively a home screen launcher plus a couple of apps. And you know, the way they positioned it is interesting. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But to me, the launch of Facebook Home, which is what we're talking about here, and I think the device it runs on are kind of irrelevant. It was kind of interesting to hear them say, actually, it's more likely to happen on Windows Phone than iOS. Well, that's kind of a no-brainer. And to a certain extent, some of the stuff is already in Windows Phone, and you wonder whether there might be some more tweaks there in the future. But this kind of promotion of Facebook content, and particularly, I think, the messaging, the chat heads, as it's known, you know, bringing that kind of Facebook experience right to the top of the UI layers, a really interesting one. It's not for everybody. I think those who live on Facebook will find this attractive, but those who are interested in other services or aren't quite so dedicated to Facebook, it might not be so interesting.
I think this is a delightfully evil move by Facebook. Let's go for three reasons. The first one is, if you look at the people who use Android, people who really love Android, the geeks, very top of the end, who write all about it, aren't going to touch this with a barge pole. Yet they probably only make up 1-2% of all of the Android user base.
Absolutely.
The big block of people who use Android, I think, are people who do a little bit of stuff online, who do a bit of email, but who do their Facebooks mostly, and maybe Twitter and Tumblr and so on as well. That block there are now going to be told through a huge intensive marketing campaign, we can make your phone better on Facebook. Done. They're there. That's it. You've got them. Now, remember, this is how Samsung got so big. Samsung spent more money in PR than Coca-Cola spent. Four times as much money as Apple spent on marketing. And that's where the Galaxy, one of the reasons I think why the Galaxy is such a strong brand and such a big sell. It's because Samsung advertises the stuff out of it. So people who like Facebook are on Facebook, who are subjected to advertising by Facebook for a Facebook thing that goes on their phone that makes Facebook easier on their phone. Zuckerberg doesn't even have to pay. And if he does, he just takes it out of his right pocket and puts it in his left pocket. So the people who this is targeted at are going to get this at them 24/7. So that's the first thing. The second thing, why? Shall we do point retort? Okay, counterpoint, Rafe.
Well, I was going to say, I absolutely agree with you. I just don't know how big that particular segment, that group that we're talking about is, because having one service take over your phone to anything else, it's always the problem I've had with the Facebook phone. People don't just use one service on the phone. You know, it's like having a Twitter phone. Now, Facebook is one of the most deeply meshed, and there's no doubt it rules the social space on the desktop, but mobile is more complicated. You have things like WhatsApp, for example, coming in, but also games and other elements. And so the assumption that you can have an overriding platform is something I think we've almost already seen defeated in mobile. And so that, if you like, that multiplicity of services, it's something that needs to be accommodated to some extent. I mean, I don't doubt that it's going to have some impact, but does it really need to take over your phone versus being an app, maybe with an alert notification there that sits on top? I think for most people that'll be sufficient, but it'd be a very interesting one to see, you know, to basically watch how far that Facebook can penetrate into this mobile space. You know,
which leads me to my second point.
Great.
As if we'd scripted this, which we haven't. Well, actually, it isn't even in our show notes thing we announced at the start. It's just this. Facebook are now doing one of the biggest A/B tests in history. They've got all the geeks who are running the Facebook app, people like you, people who want to have all the access to their applications and get out launchers, and people who just want Facebook on their phone. I think that's a really big group. There's no way that you or I can say how big that group is, Rafe. What you would need to do is release something that turns your phone into a Facebook phone and see how they use it. Yeah. And you need to do that for as little cost as possible. And you need to then be able to capture as much data as possible to see what happens. You need to constantly change that UI to change how the chat heads work, how loud the beep is, what sort of notifications come up. Facebook are essentially using, everybody knows Facebook Home, that middle block, not the geekerati, not the tech heads, not your mums and grands, people in the middle, as the biggest A/B test of a user interface before the launch of an OS ever. And I think that, again, is evil trick number two. We're building our operating system. We know that. We've learned lots of stuff about the hook. So we're just going to try it out here in public and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that's
fascinating as well.
Really,
so
good point.
That will answer the question. And they don't have to go to a survey company. They don't have to go to somebody like ComScore or any of the other survey companies whose names escaped me just now, and ask them and have the data possibly leak. They will have it all on their service. And if they want to tweak something and we need to check this parameter, they just release an update.
Yeah, and what Mark Zuckerberg said at launch is they're planning on releasing monthly updates. So it's not hard to kind of draw a pattern where this starts as, you know, this launch and this collection of apps and gradually evolves.
You see the adverts slowly getting bigger. Slowly getting bigger. Now, at some point, they'll stop. And at that point, the group that's ahead of you, that's getting the bigger adverts, will be earning less money for Facebook. And it's just like, there's our prime advert size.
Yeah. And so...
Glorious. Glorious.
That's going on. As I say, I think it comes back to the question of, you know, how much you use Facebook on your phone. And there's various servers. I mean, one of the recent ones I saw, you know, had Facebook as one of the most commonly used application, about 20% of the people's time on the phone. And we should say, when we're talking about Facebook takeover, of course, it's not taking over your phone completely, but it is taking over that all-important top layer, the lock screen and the home screen. So you can still get at all of your apps and things like that. But, you know, that's a big user change to ask people to take on.
But if they can take that time on Facebook from 20% to 30%. In other words, well, a 50% of increase in time, plus, you have to assume, an increased revenue per user on top of that increased 50% dwell time. You got to remember, mobile revenue from Facebook is about 25% of desktop revenue for Facebook. They've got to get that number up as well.
Absolutely. You know, so it's going to be a really interesting one to watch. I mean, I think the other thing we maybe should talk about here a little bit is the way that it was presented. You know, Mark Zuckerberg talked about it kind of being people first. It was language that will be very familiar to, I think, any Windows Phone user. And you can see that the same kind of principles applied. It was kind of, you know, it's not about the way you call people. It's actually about the relationships and the information, the context you have about them. So, you know, very familiar with the people hub and the kind of marketing that Microsoft used. I mean, in one sense, I think it's the ultimate compliment to Microsoft that they came up with this first. Actually, they didn't, you know, this kind of idea has been around for a while, but really interesting to see the same kind of language being used and everyone commenting on the fact, you know, Microsoft has already done this with Windows Phone. I think it's, you know, it is spot on because it is the way that people, you know, you don't use numbers or email addresses, you think of a person. And of course, this is a bet that, you know, you're going to be doing most of that through Facebook. I actually think the Microsoft approach, which pulls in multiple services, you know, creates a better experience overall. But when you do have one very dominant social channel, which is what Facebook is, if you make a really good experience around that, people might be willing to sort of give it up a little bit on the other things. And there's nothing to say that Facebook couldn't, you know, pull in some of these other services anyway. So interesting one to watch for sure. And you know, HTC producing, of course, Windows Phone device, they're also doing the kind of the first Facebook phone in the HTC first. But maybe that gives us a short excuse to talk about HTC numbers, Ewan.
It does, yes. But just before I'll slip in point three, because I did say there was three points here.
Yes, there were three points.
And it's just a little PR point here. If the Facebook home had only been available in the HTC first, it would have got into the hands of about 5,000 to 10,000 people at most, and 7,000 of them would have had review units given to the PR company, and it would have been deemed a failure. Facebook can now go out, spend money on advertising, buying advertising slots around the end of the March Baskets NBA tournaments, go out, have people download it. Doesn't matter if they uninstall it again, because you know every geek rat, even though they're not going to use it, is going to download to look at it just so they can moan and get the hits on their Facebook page and their blogs. They will be able to advertise, and I'm guessing they're going to do their best to say, we had 1 million people download this. And that is far more impressive than go, we sold 10,000 HTC units of a mid-range Android handset that doesn't even have Sense on it.
Yeah, this side-loading aspect is very interesting.
Yeah. 1 million, 10,000.
I do agree with you in one sense, but at the same time, I think people underestimate the amount of effort required to get people to sideload any app, and particularly one that, you know, takes over like this. It will be interesting to watch, and I may be wrong here, but having talked to manufacturers in the past, they talk about, you know, how important it is if you, you know, really want to get people using stuff to have it pre-installed. And I think this will be the issue that Facebook maybe faces a bit of resistance from operators. So we'll wait and see.
28 days after launch, or as near as the first press release comes out, more or less than 500,000 installs, Rafe. I'm going to say more.
Oh, it will be more, but in order to sort of be meaningful, this we're talking about needing to get to, you know, 50 million, 100 million. You know, that's difficult because that would be all the kind of, well, it wouldn't be, would it be all the devices? Probably looking at the initial list of compatible ones, given the Samsung Galaxy is included in that. They're going to need to be strong out of the gate, and there'll be plenty of people criticising, of course.
I'm sure they'll get a million within the first month.
I think they'll quite comfortably do a million in
and
the first month.
And for an A-B test of 1 million users.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. Right, yeah, HTC numbers. Tell me something nice about them, because from what I can see, it's a graph going down. On top of a graph going down, on top of a, we didn't get our handsets out in time because we have supply chain issues, and they're going to continue into the next three months.
Yeah, this was HTC released their kind of initial numbers for Q1, and basically the sales are down again and the profits down again. They're only just breaking even. It's sort of 0.9 million pounds in terms of profit. I think more seriously is actually the sales numbers are down 30% from the previous quarter. That's not all that surprising for Q1. But more seriously, it's down 37% from, you know, Q1 2012. And it's down again from, you know, if you look back to 2011, that's actually probably the more serious one. At that period, they were doing 104 billion Taiwan dollars, and it's now down to 42 billion. So, you know, more than halving the sales. That just creates a problem that's difficult to manage in terms of, you know, your cash flow. Basically, you know, HTC have got to manage that quite carefully in order to make sure they've got enough money to operate with. And that's paying for, you know, device development, manufacturing and marketing campaigns. If you're doing a big investment in marketing, you don't really want your sales going down, because you can get a bit of a vicious circle where you have to cut back on the marketing in order to, you know, balance your books, basically. And that results in less sales and so on. Actually, the results for this particular quarter, it's because the HTC One, the kind of their new Android device, which I've been really impressed by. I personally would rate it as the best Android device on the market at the moment, indeed ahead of the Samsung Galaxy S4, is a bit late coming out. And so Q1 looks worse than expected. You know, they've missed their forecast by about 10 billion Taiwan dollars, which is a significant amount, so missed by 20%. So, you know, the issue facing them now is, as I said, this kind of, they need to avoid the sales coming down anymore to so they can manage the cash flow properly. But they've also got to make sure this device sells well, and then, you know, obviously getting follow-on device into the market in a timely fashion. And essentially the crux of their problem is they've got Nokia in the Windows phone ecosystem competing very strongly. You know, Nokia are taking at least 80% of the device sales, according to most of the numbers that we're seeing. And it's a similar situation in the Android marketplace. You know, there's Samsung. There are lots of other small Android manufacturers as well. But Samsung is kind of the big game in town, I guess.
I actually think it's worse at Android, because whereas they're a clear number two at Windows Phone at the moment, and they're no longer, I don't know, I think they're still number two on Windows Phone, but now they're much closer to the chasing pack. I think Sony's going to overtake them by the end of the year, quite clearly. Sony have just released the third Xperia, the so-called splash-proof, waterproof Xperia Z. I have a review in here for some of the other sites that I do. It's a very nice device. It's a bit too square and angular for me, and the 5-inch screen is just far too big, but I'll let Steve argue on that one. But I think HTC in Android will get swallowed up by Sony. And I think HTC need to now look in the mirror and decide. They've got three routes open to them now, I think. One is commit wholly to Windows Phone. One is commit wholly to Android. And the third is to go back to what they used to do, which is white labeling the HTC first.
See, I think that's a slightly too negative view on them. I think they need to see what happens with the HTC One, because they've got a great device there.
That's why I said, tell me something nice about them.
You know, and that's going to be about the marketing and the sales channel and all that. You know, I wouldn't pretend it's not going to be difficult for them. And I think you're right about the Android space. I mean, it's actually the issue for a lot of Android manufacturers. There's so much competition that the margins are getting smaller. You've got Samsung that's kind of the big elephant in the room, but plenty of others. And for obviously the Windows phone space, the big problem is that it's just not a very big market at the moment. I mean, that may change a little bit as we go through the year, but it looks like Nokia is going to be dominant. You know, it'll depend what devices come out next. I mean, one of the comments on the story I thought was quite interesting, saying, you know, what if HTC did control 50% of the Windows phone space? Well, that wouldn't make a difference. And I thought about it. I think it might do, because we'd be talking about, you know, 3 million or so units that are sold on Windows Phone. And depending on the numbers that you look at, that probably could have been 50% or perhaps even more of their Android device sales. So obviously, it would be
three or four times.
BlackBerry
have shipped in the first quarter. And of course, BlackBerry's on the way to perfect health, and Sun and Cookies and Rainbows falling down from the sky on 1 million shipped.
Well, they've both got the same problem. They've released a new product, but they need to get some of that through the rest of the portfolio. They also need to sort out the marketing, the sales channel. Their traditional market has kind of been squeezed because competition has come in from elsewhere. I mean, yes, I think you have to say HTC, it's not desperate yet, but there's certainly some, I'm sure, alarm bells going off. And Peter Chow, the CEO there, has sort of said, if the One doesn't work, I'll resign. Actually, it might be curtains for the company if it doesn't quite work out. Let's not get too dramatic about it. It's easy to talk about that sort of thing as being, you know, danger, cliffs and all that sort of thing. But what I think it is fair to say that if this continues, HTC very much becomes an acquisition target potentially, because the share price will fall away a bit more. But they are very good at building, you know, devices. They've got strong design teams, strong technology teams in place, and, you know, actually a brand that's starting to be a bit more respected, stronger in some markets than others, it's fair enough to say. But you can think of a company like Lenovo, for example, might come along and go, yes, this would be a good one for us to acquire, particularly to get into, say, the US market, where HTC, you know, their brand is stronger, arguably, than it is in Europe. So interesting one to watch and think of interest to the Windows Phone ecosystem, because at the moment they are the, you know, the second Windows Phone manufacturer, and I think will remain that way. I'm sure they're working on their next generation of Windows Phone devices as well, just as everybody else is.
Yeah. Can I be really cheeky and sneaky and snide here just for one moment, Rafe?
Of course. As ever, Ewan.
Do Microsoft have any divisional heads that could be the new CEO of HTC? You know, completely independently, of course, they would fly over and they'd have, you know, completely open doors, and we're not trying to have Microsoft run the place at all. And yes, I used to run the Windows Office division as well.
I'm sure there's plenty of people who work for Microsoft who could potentially go into that role, but I actually think it's a slightly different company and a different situation. I mean, HTC and Nokia do get compared, but I think whereas Nokia's problem was actually around some of the software.
Who said anything about Nokia? Not me. That was Rafe, mm-hmm. everybody. You all
yes.
heard that.
Yeah. I think actually HTC is just facing very, very strong competition. I don't think there's an awful lot wrong with their product portfolio in the product sense and the technology and the design behind it. It's more the sales and the marketing side of things. So it's quite hard to be critical of that. It's not an area I'm particularly have any expertise in. But I think people will look at recent HTC devices, including the 8X, and the HTC One, the One X, and the One S from last year. There's nothing that you say those are poor products. You compare them to what they're competing against. The 920, I think, does have maybe some extra innovation in there, but there are arguments both ways for that. The One X compared to the Samsung Galaxy S3, and then the S4 versus One. I actually think HTC have a bit more of an advantage this time around.
That's a really interesting matchup, though, because Samsung are putting so much emphasis on their own homegrown software on the SGS4, and HTC really focused on the hardware on the One.
And it's really interesting because these are kind of the points of differentiation, and it's relevant, of course, to Windows Phone, because this is the argument that kind of Nokia made. They were better able to do it on Windows Phone than they would have done on Android. And I think the design side is really important, and HTC have demonstrated, being able to produce a great device. But Samsung, I actually think their hardware is good, but I don't think it quite measures up to the HTC One. That's a personal view, and you'll get people who find the posing view, particularly around removal batteries and micro SD cards and all that kind of thing. And it's a general pattern you get from both companies. But Samsung have really pushed some of their services, but it's actually the Samsung brand. I mean, to be fair, HTC have done the same thing, but I think traditionally they've been maybe a little closer to Google, and they have had Sense, of course. But I think you can look at that particular matchup and sort of learn quite a lot about the way the industry is working. And Samsung have undoubtedly been very successful. I think that mainly comes about through their scale, and ultimately it kind of proves what we've said many times about the mobile phone industry. Economies of scale, volume does matter, and Samsung has an advantage there, just as Nokia had an advantage for many years, and arguably still does, at least in the Windows Phone world, and because it's still producing the feature phones as well, some of those component stuff. These big companies have an advantage over smaller companies, even though they can sometimes be nimbler, be swifter to do things. But the trouble is, those smaller companies quite often have competition coming up behind them from, smaller manufacturers. And particularly at the moment, it's out of China. I think that may spread in time to other markets as well. Maybe India will be a big one there. And so kind of the next HTC is coming along and snapping at their heels. And so making that leap from the smaller company up into the big leagues is very difficult. And I'm not sure we've seen anyone do it yet. Apple may be a rule unto themselves. And we've certainly seen big companies fall back. But compared to what it used to be like, actually in some ways, the market has got divided between some very big companies and then lots of small companies. So one to watch. I mean, maybe we'll talk about this on a future podcast, but we've got some other bits and pieces to get through.
That's a shame, really, because I was about to go, if Apple have Apple and Google have Motorola and Nokia and Microsoft has Nokia, should Facebook have HTC?
Well,
should they maybe even just invest in a little bit in it in the same way that's happening with Dell and go, look, we'll buy 20% of HTC?
That's the kind of speculation you can have. I think actually,
yeah, let's back that up. That speculation I just thought about just now. I've not researched or know anything about it.
I think the only thing about that is Facebook isn't a complete ecosystem or platform in quite the same way that Google, Apple, and Microsoft are. You might say yet, but I actually think Microsoft. you know, and Google and Apple are different. Facebook will want to play across all of those because it's kind of raison d'etre is to, you know, to be everywhere.
HTC play across all the OSs as well. So if they were just to take a little bit of investment to give them some capital to keep the marketing going, to keep their foot in with Android, with Windows Phone, with various Linux distributions, with Facebook Home as well, I need to think about that.
Certainly it's interesting. And this idea that you're going to have, you know, one manufacturer behind each of the big platforms is interesting. I think, you know, sometimes it's tempting to break down the market into these simple divisions and sort of order it into a nice picture. It's more complicated than that. The, you know, the best evidence you can give from this is quite clearly Samsung doesn't want to be beholden to Google. It's kind of stopped using Android, and Google in its marketing messaging, it refers always to the Samsung devices and the Samsung services, and ultimately it probably like to move off Android. You know, you can speculate whether that's going to be on something like Tizen or whether they would, you know, fork Android itself.
I'll be Tizen with an Android compatibility layer. That's my guess.
That would be my guess as well. And that then leaves Google in an interesting situation, of course. But, you know, that's the kind of discussion that I think people are starting to have now. And actually, I think that's going to be the next interesting question, having, you know, the last couple of years, are there going to be more than two ecosystems? Has everyone gone, yes, there's going to be more than two ecosystems. And actually, it's probably going to break down into three or four big ones and then some little ones as well. And the next thing will be, you know, what role do the big service providers and Google and Facebook and Amazon all playing a role there, you know, and Microsoft arguably as well, and perhaps Apple, you know, how's that going to work? You know, is Microsoft going to continue to offer services across all the mobile platforms? Will Apple come out of its isolation? No, is the answer to that one. So these questions are not easy to answer, and we managed to wander away totally from the Windows Phone topic, but hopefully people have enjoyed this this bit of sidetracking.
You're listening to the AAA podcast of Major League Smartphones, which is all about Android. Maybe we should at some point, Rafe, just do an entire one on Android. It would just be this one, wouldn't it? But lately, and I think it's probably because we've been distracted, because it was the 40th birthday of the mobile phone last week.
It was indeed.
So it's one of those times where you just sit back and go,
wow.
Yeah.
Not that long, actually. And this was the first mobile phone call made with a prototype Motorola device and obviously an analog call. And things didn't kick off until, you know, quite a bit later. But even so, it seems like not all that long ago.
So I thought, we have our app picks of the week. I thought we should go for our phone picks of the 40 years.
Ooh. I've not been around 40 years.
Oh, Wikipedia something then.
Ah, right.
Yeah, Buffy, fake it, I don't know. Yeah. So look, I've got two honourable mentions and one that I'm going to go for.
Okay, go on then.
But how many of you got just the one, or have you got someone?
I'm thinking right now since I didn't know this was what we were doing.
I'm spoiling the magic of radio. My first honourable mention has to go to the Nokia 7650. The first S60 device. Or Series 60 devices, it was known then, and I still haven't got the nomenclature right. 4 megabytes, 3.2 megabytes of available storage once all the operating system stuff had kicked in. Bless. It's a VGA camera, little slide out keyboard, but this was and still is a futuristic looking phone. I mean, I think if you put this up nowadays, okay, the fact that it hides the keypad away and there's quite a lot of chrome around the screen, you wouldn't fake it or think of it as a top line handset, but it still looks stylish and different. It got the job done then and now, and I went through quite a few of these in terms of replacements and was always happy when I said, right, will I get a different phone or will I stay with the 7650? Oh, I'll just get another 7650 in warranty. And was just really happy with it. It didn't have any sort of expansion. It was, and the picture quality was quite poor on a VGA camera. But it was one that sort of said, this is what your single-handed smartphone is going to be able to do in the future. So honorable mention to that one. Any honorables from you?
Well, I think I'm going to give an honorable mention to the first Windows mobile device I remember using, which was the Orange SPV, it was actually the first kind of Windows mobile smartphone. It came with a clip-on camera.
Oh, yes.
It had the sort of 12 key layout. This was back, you know, when smartphones didn't have touch screens. And it was kind of amazing because it was, Microsoft Windows on a mobile device, there was a start button, and there were things like Messenger and a whole load of other Microsoft apps. And you know, it kind of was the shrunk down version of the pocket PCs. But for me, that kind of gets an honorable mention as, you know, the first Microsoft mobile product that I used for any length of time.
I mean, I remember the Casio CM500 pocket PC, not a phone. Really nice handset. I also want to flag up Nokia N95 8GB, which is essentially the 7650 on steroids and a couple of years down the line. Almost the final part of that concept of the slider handset, still with a physical keypad. There were a couple after that one. So I think the N95 8GB was about as far as you could go with that form factor. If you went for it now, I think because of the size of the screens and everything, it would just be too cumbersome to have your slide-out keypad, and the ergonomics no longer work anymore. But you had a really good camera, which is still good enough today around your
stuff. Better than most phones on the market, I would say.
Indeed,
it's just a bit slow.
8GB of storage, okay, it wasn't expandable, but in those days, 8GB was more than enough. And, you know, nowadays, it's just about doable as well, as we can see with some of the Windows Phone 8 handsets that come out without the SD card support. I still think it was gimmicky that you slid down for the play controls. I actually never really used that bit, even though they were there, but it was nice to show off. And, again, that was the maturing concept, but it's only an honourable for me. So, Rafe, do you have another honourable, or shall we go to your...
No, I can come up with another honourable mention.
Oh, all right then. Okay.
And for me, I mean, I'm sticking with smartphones, and I agree with both the ones you've mentioned, and I probably would have chosen them. I was tempted by the P800, which was actually a Sony Ericsson device, and it was my first ever smartphone. But instead,
a five-way cursor control thumb wheel at the side.
That's right. But I'm going to mention the Nokia 5230, which was actually one of Nokia's Symbian devices. And this was running S60 5th edition. And it was kind of the low-cost version of the 5800, which was Nokia's first touchscreen smartphone. The reason I want to mention this one is it's actually the best-selling smartphone ever. I'm just trying to remember. I think it's over 150 million unit sales. So by some distance, it sort of outpaces everything else. And so I think it's notable for that extent. And it very rarely gets talked about, very rarely gets mentioned. But in terms of the first really successful smartphone, you know, that's probably it. And, you know, it's spot on with the trends that we talk about today, you know, the importance of low-cost handsets, you know, taking that idea of smartphone and computing to, you know, a mass market. You know, it wasn't the sort of device that was picked up by, you know, power users. It was very much a low-end product, but very worthy mention, I think, in this sort of birthday roundup.
To be fair, that's the handset you guys gave me for South by Southwest trip about 3 years ago. You said, you're only getting $200. You've got to buy the phone, the apps and the coverage and not have a contract at the end of it.
That is true. Yes.
Yeah. I do remember that. 150 million.
And I should just point out, because I'm sure we're going to get people mentioning this, that the N95 8GB did have a micro SD card slot, as far as I remember at least. So it was expandable.
Cool. One of us is going to be wrong. I'll decide whether I'm going to push that point later on once I've checked in Wikipedia. 150 million. I've learned something. I've learned something from the podcast, Rafe. Thank you.
Excellent. That's what we aim to
do. Right then. Okay. Pick of the phones for 40 years for me. The Nokia 9210. The first Symbian-powered Nokia communicator. That was the one for me, because it was a phone, it was a computer, it still had the really good agenda and diary system that came over from the Zion. It had the OPL programming language in, which means I could program my phone on my phone and wrap it up and publish it and do the whole process from the handset. Wonderful battery life. Okay, form factor was, I remember people going, oh, it's far too big, and I'd love to stick it next to an iPad mini and go, yeah, who's big now? And it was a time where Sound was still pretty much on top of the hill, just kind of tipping over, and it looked like Symbian was going in a direction that was going to be really successful. Turns out it was maybe slightly 1 or 2 degrees to the left, so instead of going past the moon and off into a joyous deep space mission, it crashed into the moon like a third stage of a Saturn V rocket 20 years later. But it still, this was a device that not only showed promise, but also delivered on the promise and said, you know what? There is still more to come. But even now, you can have something fully functional. And what's that form factor now? And I think it's a crying shame, but it's the 9210 for me.
It's interesting. Now, you've picked a whole bunch of smartphones.
I have. And the interesting thing for me is they're all Nokias.
Yes, well, it's
and,
kind
and,
of...
And I'm and you're the company man, and you've went for an Ericsson already and a Nokia. So well,
and for my last one, I mean, I'm tempted to...
Say the StarTAC. Say the StarTAC
from pick
Motorola.
Another smartphone. And actually, the Motorola, some of the Razors, which were really iconic for when I was, you know, growing up, that was kind of the phone that everybody wanted to have. And I'm tempted to pick one of the modern, you know, Windows phone devices. You know, the temptation for this is always to pick the most recent phone. And, you know, the Lumia 920 would kind of be an obvious candidate there in terms of it's, you know, the most sophisticated phone I've bought, you know, in terms of things like the optical image stabilizing memory, you know, the screen being really readable outside. And all sorts of other bits and pieces in it as well. And for the same reason, you could choose the iPhone 5 or the Samsung Galaxy S4 or the HTC One or maybe even a BlackBerry device. And it's tempting to pick a BlackBerry device here. But I'm actually going to go back again to the Nokia feature phones because for me, despite the rise of the smartphones, something I think that's still going on, what represents for me the biggest thing looking back over 40 years is just the rise of the mobile phone in general to make calls and send text messages, and the idea that you can have this little box that you can, you know, stand on the other side of the world and call someone back home. There's still something pretty amazing about it. Smartphones, yeah, they're even more amazing, but that first concept, you know, still every now and then you think I'm sending a text, you know, and it just amazes me. So I'm actually cheating by using a list of the top 20 mobile phones that have been produced. And again, I'm going to go for the one on volume. So if I'm just going to pick one, it's going to be the Nokia 1110 or the Nokia 1110, which sold 250 million units, launched in 2005. And so it's kind of, you know, the cheap Nokia mass market phone. And actually, if you look at the top 10 phones, 9 out of the top 10 are from Nokia, which I think speaks towards the impact they've had on the mobile industry, you know, so far. There are more customers of Nokia out there than any other consumer electronic. And it's all about their feature phones, of which, you know, this device is one. You know, you could pick out some of the others. I mean, the Nokia Countdown, the 3210 or the 3210, you know, that sold 160 million. Again, I think that's a phone that loads and loads of people remember. And, you know, some of the others as well really stick in the memory. But as I say, you know, choosing just one is difficult. So I've plumped for the 1110. Many, many, many worthy devices out there, but it's just sometimes worth reflecting. Just, you know, that miracle of modern communications that has shrunk space like nothing else I can think of.
There we go, and it all started with the iPhone.
Well, that's the one thing that, yeah. Yeah, it just annoys me when people say that, you know, the iPhone is synonymous with smartphones. I actually think the N95 8 gigs a great example because for me that's the pinnacle of the first wave of smartphones. And people may say that's not a smartphone, but believe me, back then it most certainly was a smartphone.
That was the end of the beginning.
And, you know, the second generation was the touchscreen devices, and I think absolutely they were ushered in by the iPhone, and Apple deserves an enormous amount of credit for that. But the very
are we still in that second block then, Rafe, of the touchscreens? Do you think there's another one, you know, just around the corner? Is Google Glass going to be the sort of lead of the third wave? Is there something we're missing?
This was something I was thinking about the other day because I firmly believe you do tend to move.
By the way, all about
cycles.
Windows Phone podcast here, all about windowsphone.com. Carry on.
I think it's difficult to say, you know, is there a big new paradigm? It was obvious with touchscreens because it was one of the big ways you interact with the phone. It made it different. To me, the next big thing is smartphones not being, you know, devices that exist on their own. And of course, they haven't been like that for quite a while. But what I mean by that is that the expectation will be that you'll use them with multiple other devices. And I'm talking about, you know, interacting maybe with your TV, with your computer, but also with various things attached to you, you know, the idea of wearable computing and, you know, the exercise things like Fitbit or the Nike system that, you know, that's coming in now with low power Bluetooth. I think we'll see a lot more of that. And Google Glass could perhaps be seen as an extension of that, you know, how will you do heads-up displays, you know, screens on glass windows, all that kind of thing. And so the idea, I think, of the smartphone as being the center of a whole hub of electronic devices or consumer electronics is maybe, for me, the next generation. But there could equally be something unexpected come along. You know, in one sense, it's the move away from the smartphone as a singular object to being an experience that actually exists across many devices. That, for me, is going to be kind of the next big thing.
Ooh, spooky. Okay, we've got to do app of the week now. It's kind of a bit of a, Yeah. It's like that bit at the end of Chips where they where Ponzarella just like sits around his bike eating a burger. Yeah, solved another case. Go on then, app of the week, Rafe.
For me, this is picture info, and actually this is, as a result, someone tweeted me saying, what are you using to look at EXIF data on your phone? That's all the kind of bits that go along with a picture telling you where it was captured, what it was captured with.
Yeah, f-stops and shutter settings and things that you can get technically.
And I realised I've been using this app without actually telling anyone about it, so I'm correcting that oversight. And I did tweet this earlier in the week, but yes, this is picture info. It's a free download from the Windows Phone Store. All it really is you can select a picture, a photo from your camera roll or your save pictures or any other album and easily view the EXIF data associated with it. So, you know, it also plots, if you've got location data in the photo, it'll plot that and show it on a map. But mainly it's really about seeing that text data. So a useful utility if you want to get at that kind of extra data that comes with your photographs.
I'm going to go with the game title. Excellent. And it is the annoyingly, horribly, wonderfully, crazily addictive Puzzlecraft. Now, we do have a review of this back on the site. Slapped an 87% score on it. And for those of you who know how generous I am with the scoring, it scored 87%. It's a basic match 3 game. It's grafted on top of a resource collection game, which is then grafted on top of a how big can you build your village game. And they've managed to take lots of disparate gaming elements and crash them together. And it is just utterly compelling in the same way as fast food, when you're eating it, is utterly compelling. And you just, I'll have some more, I'm going to pop, you know. It's like, I need some soft scoop ice cream. And rest in peace, the creator of soft scoop ice cream, Hilda Thatcher, I believe, who died this week. Thoughts with her and her contribution to the dessert course of everybody's favorite menu. But Puzzlecraft is just, I don't want it to be addictive. It's such a simple game. It infuriates me, but I'm still playing it a week after the review. I'm still building up my village. I'm still smiling when I do it. And it has to be my app of the week for that.
Well, there we go then. So I think that's almost concludes this longer than expected after we said we'd only do half an hour.
We're now
about the 45-minute mark of this All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you've got any feedback on these issues, we did get a little off topic this week, but hopefully we've provided some interesting commentary along the way.
It's an interesting one because I know people will probably want to come to this podcast because it's all about Windows Phone, but you can't talk about Windows Phone
in isolation,
without looking at Android, without looking at iOS. If all we had in our hands was Windows Phones, people go, oh yeah, but X has been doing it for Y months and everything. You know, I mean, Rafe, you're probably like me. You could probably reach out about 4 or 5 operating systems within 3 feet of you just now.
Yes, I've got...
You don't need to do a roll call, but the point is, we do experience all of that. We do keep an eye on all of that stuff as well. And it you know, everything...
I'm ashamed to admit, I've only got four within arm's reach, so I've obviously failed that test.
Count the laptop.
Oh, well, 5 then.
Yeah, 5. Yay! and your Kodak digital camera, because that plays Doom, so that's probably got OS on it as well. I think it's important sometimes that we do are able to look up and compare where Windows Phone is compared to the rest of the market, but we won't do it all the time. Yeah. We will concentrate more next week. We promise, Scout's Honor.
Yeah. Well, we do always try and provide context in our stories. And I think having that knowledge of other platforms, I know we regularly go through periods of using other phones. I've just been using an HTC One, which is why I was able to talk about it a little bit in this podcast and in a positive way as well. You've been using the Z10 recently, Ewan. Maybe we won't ask that question.
No, actually, no, that's right. The Z10, has the same rough sort of feature set. It does the same sort of things as other smartphones do. It does it in a slightly different way. But I think for a new platform, it needs to be doing something radically different. The switching cost is going to be quite high for many people. So there needs to be a good cost benefit. And while I think that the BlackBerry 10 OS does have merit in some areas, I don't think that that's enough to balance off the switching costs of coming from an Android device or an iOS device, or, you know, even for someone who's been 2 years on Windows Phone. I want to see more from BlackBerry before I could say it's a switchable device. If you're coming at it clean, or maybe coming from BlackBerry 7 and you're looking for a new device, then the playing field is much more level, and then BlackBerry is a good choice. But to go into a platform that's still new with a company that's got a very short runway of startup money,
yeah,
I'm not a buy, but I'm not a sell, as the analysts would say. For the moment, this is a hold.
Yeah, well, I've also used a Z10, and I had much the same feeling. I think it's great for established BlackBerry users, and I think it'll be good for retaining their customer base. But it's hard to see big amount of people switching over. Now, may prove to be wrong. I think the one thing that might be interesting here is the Q10, and it's, you know, the best QWERTY device or best QWERTY smartphone I've seen for some time, and I think that could attract a certain amount of interest and might even cause a few people to switch over.
I think that will see more people move up from BB7 to BB10.
And yes, it's certainly going to help with that as well. So an interesting one to watch, but it's hard to see how they'll have the same, you know, scale and breadth as Windows Phone, because, you know, BlackBerry will be facing off not just against Nokia, they've also got, you know, HTC to consider and all of Microsoft's money. I think they've done some nice stuff, you know. People who like the idea of gestures, or who liked MeeGo on the N9, are going to like how BlackBerry 10's been implemented. But I'm not sure it's all that easy, you know, for, you know, people to pick up and use in some ways to its fullest extent. And when it works, it works lovely, you know. And gestures, to me, feel like, you know, they're the same as keyboard shortcuts. They're there, but actually only a minority of the power users use them.
See, but the thing is, to me, the gestures in the BlackBerry 10, we're way off course here. That is just like, on an iOS device, you press the home button. On a Windows device, you press the Windows key. On an Android device, you press the home soft key. On a BlackBerry device, you swipe up with your thumb. It's not a complicated gesture. It's just a different way of implementing the home function. And
I was thinking more of the kind of the side-to-side gestures, peeking into messages and that kind of thing.
That's from the slide up again. When you slide up, right, if it comes in from the side, yeah, and you just move it left and right. I think that the gestures are overblown.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly interesting. Of course, as Ewan says, we're off topic.
Yeah,
but the fact that we're having this discussion and not saying it's perfect, and it's interesting, you know, BlackBerry have taken stuff from Windows Phone, or at least there are indications of copy. You know, people talk about the equivalent of the people have on BlackBerry, and yes, it is very similar. You know, there's a lot to kind of reward it. And I think, you know, for early adopters, people who like playing with new platforms, actually the Z10 is quite attractive. To me, it doesn't break new ground in quite the same way that Windows Phone does. However, I would say as a first version, it's more mature than Windows Phone 7 was, because it's now competing against Windows Phone 8, which is that much more mature. So it's difficult for me to see how, you know, BlackBerry manages to grow. I think it maybe can retain its current position. Is that enough to be a sustainable business? Kind of wait and see.
If they sell 5 million handsets a year and cannot make it a viable business, they're doing something wrong.
The cost of developing your own platform on just 5 million units, I mean, the way it's going to come down to, again, the lower cost devices.
They've already done a lot of that already with the playbook, though.
They have, but it's not just a question of standing still, and I actually think this is the ultimate problem for them, in that they have to keep moving, they have to keep innovating, keep developing things, and they can't really afford to make any mistakes. And, it, you know, perfect execution is something that's very hard to do. Now, you can see that in the Microsoft, in the Nokia world, they've made mistakes, and it's had a bad impact, not terminal, but for BlackBerry, because they have maybe less leeway, it could be more dangerous. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, this all, of course, then gets tied up into what happens with Android next. Where is iOS going? You know, how will Microsoft's three-screen vision of coming together things, you know, where's that all going to go? And I think there's quite a bit of uncertainty in the mobile industry more generally. You know, can you have these boutique players, which is essentially what BlackBerry would be, and you can see Yola with Sailfish doing something similar.
Firefox and Ubuntu.
Absolutely. You know, where's Tizen going to play into this? And, you know, does Apple do something to capture a bigger market share, or does it just continue to focus on the high end? And all those kind of questions. So maybe we'll try and address some of them. But next week, we'll try and make it a little bit more focused on Windows Phone, because we'll have some handsets to talk about, because we should by then have had our hands on the 520 and the 720 for a few days.
Lovely. Yes. Anyway, thank you all very much for listening and for doing this little sort of appendix after we should have said goodbye. But we'll say that now. It's goodbye for me, Ewan Spence.
And goodbye for me, Rafe Blanford.
Thank you very much for listening. www.isnotneeded.allaboutwindowsphone.com.